Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a difference in this world. We're going to explore many important aspects and areas of life, including spiritual, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, entrepreneurism, and many more important topics. Our broadcast team so far consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors, as well as a number of authors. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor, and I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly eZine newsletter. I recently spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1" due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. Despite those physical challenges, I'm very well known for always answering amazing when asked how I'm doing. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that is the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website, which is tom2andtall.com, T-A-L-L. My guest today is Rene Godefroy, which is exciting for me. I found out about him from LinkedIn. Rene was born in a tiny and remote village in Haiti and was an impoverished child tormented by illnesses. And as a child, he survived primarily on breadfruit, and the occasional rare fish he caught with a string and a hook. He arrived in the U.S. with only $5, 2 shirts, and 1 pair of pants housed in a tattered briefcase, and he did not speak any English. While many were complaining about their circumstances, Rene saw a huge opportunity to seize the American dream. Today, Rene is living the American dream. He's one of America's most sought-after motivational speakers, and he has spoken with top companies such as Affleck, Coca-Cola, AT&T, and Verizon Wireless, just to name a few. They seek him out as the motivational speaker to help them boost morale. His motivational message is quite simple. No condition is permanent. As a humanitarian, Rene's vision is to inspire millions in remote places that are living lives of resignation and quiet desperation. Welcome to the show today, Rene.
Great to be with you, Tom. It's an honor to be on your show, so I'm looking forward to connecting with your audience in a remarkable way.
Thank you so, so much. I love your story. And one of the things I talk to people about and I'm well known for is not complaining. And I tell people that most complaints that people have in North America, I think of speaking to someone in a third world country and complaining about what I would complain about. And I think, what would they think of me if I was complaining about this or that or my job or my boss or being tired? You've lived through that experience yourself, haven't you?
Yes, absolutely. It's amazing that you are saying that because not long ago I went to my village in Haiti where I started with nothing and poverty and diseases. Left the village and then went to Port-au-Prince, the city of Haiti, where I even struggled more there. Life was very tough, but I'll come back to that in a moment. I just want to share this because I was saying to the villagers, and I was explaining to them about some of the stresses that people have in America. And I talk about the highways and the traffic so backed up, and people are complaining, and they even have road rage. Tom,
they shoot each
other. So, and then one of the people there told me, "Wow, So Americans call that problems, too many cars. That's a problem for them. I say, yeah. And I remember he said, I would gladly trade places with them and take their problems.
So true, isn't it? And some of the problems we complain about, they could not even understand. I recently upgraded my iPhone. I lost 650 phone numbers. And for about a day, I was moaning and groaning about it. Then I thought, come on, like 30 to 40% of the world has never even dialed a phone. So come on, what am I complaining about?
I know. Now, I read something the other day that says gratitude makes what you have enough, right? So the moment you begin to be grateful for what you have, suddenly you look, because by nature, Tom, we are greedy, aren't we, right? We want more of everything.
Yes.
I mean, my God, we never have enough.
I upgraded my iPhone and I didn't even need to.
Exactly. What did you get, the 5 or?
I upgraded to the 4S from the 3.
Okay.
So I thought, it's about time I do that. And like, I need one. Oh,
yeah,
crazy.
Exactly. And then you look at it, do you really need an iPhone, right? So that's what, coincidentally, the marketers and the business people have to really understand. People don't really pay for what they need. They pay for what they want. So this is a prime example of this thing here in a society of we want so much. And the marketers and the advertisers realize that, like, when we have that, and then so even they create that kind of want, right? Steve Jobs at Apple would, you know, create this a craving for an iPhone. And not just the, you know, 4, not just the, now we have the 5 that we have to stand in line. I was at the mall a couple of years ago when the third generation iPhone came out. One guy, Tom, was standing in line for about 12 hours waiting to buy the iPhone. Now, here's what's remarkable about this. I went to the guy and I asked him, look, I see you have an iPhone in your hand. You're playing with it. So how long have you been in the line? He said, 12 hours. I said, so what are you going to do in there? He said, I'm going to buy the new iPhone. I said, are you kidding me? You have an iPhone and you're playing with it. And then I said, do you realize next week if you come to the store, you can walk in 5 seconds and buy an iPhone? And he said, yeah, but I won't be the first one of my friends to have the iPhone. That's the whole thing. Now, talking about crazy, talking about problems we have in this country, right? So the thing is, for me, as an outsider who is in this country, and by the way, I have, I am deeply in love with this great nation because no country in the world would give me the opportunity to be who I am today, right? Only in these United States of America. But as an outsider, I know that the average American throws away about, what, $1,500 worth of food in a trash can? Now, I don't know what it is for you in Canada, right, Tom?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto.
Okay. Oh, you're in Toronto. I don't know what it is for you. I think it's probably the same or maybe even more. But the point is, if you take your population and you multiply it by $1,500, do you know how much money that gives us? Now, in North America, our problem, right, is not less. Our problem is more. It's more of a – I mean, come on. How can you spend $40 billion on an airplane to fight, yet – we have countries with no hospitals, right? We have countries where people are suffering. Now, this is not to make anybody feel guilty of anything. This is, you know, you and I know, it's just to give people a perspective. If you are feeling, like, depressed today, if you are feeling the pinch of stress, and if you think things are bad for you, I'm only giving you a wake-up call to realize maybe things are not that bad. Maybe you should be grateful, because the moment you become grateful, whatever you have is enough, right?
Totally, totally. And so often I think our challenge is that we are not, we haven't experienced enough of the world, so we compare ourselves to our peers, people in our neighborhood, our city, our state or province, even our country. But if you compare yourself on a global basis, poverty statistics say that 30 to 40% of the world live on less than $2 a day. And so if you live in North America, you live in a house with a leak-proof roof, you eat every day, you have a TV, even if you don't own a car, you take public transit, you got a job. If you have a house, you eat every day, you have a job. Globally, that will put you ahead of probably 70% of the world. And you're complaining about needing the iPhone a week early, or, and you're right, I'm 5'1", so when I go to a restaurant, the servings are huge. I end up a lot of times leaving what some people don't eat probably in days or maybe even a week. And, you know, it's horrible that this is our experience, you know?
Yeah. Tom, it's, I think happiness in our society is very conditional. So it's when I get this, I'll be happy. But the thing is, when we get this, we realize oftentimes the very same thing that we want in order to be happy turns out to be the source of our unhappiness.
Exactly.
You know, anything you name. I mean, from children to marriage to buying a house to buying a car to having whatever. You know, like I met a young guy. He wanted a car. When he got the car, he was extremely happy to drive around and show his car to his friends. Well, 2 months later, he is worrying about paying for the car.
Yeah.
So the very same thing that really made him happy. So having said that, conditional happiness is conditional happiness. So you don't have to wait for anything to be happy. You can make a decision right now to be happy and without any condition, right? You know,
yes.
Tom, they have the, what they call the laughter rooms in India, where you go there, people before they go to work, they just go to that building and they start laughing.
Wow.
And then it was on Good Morning America, and I was watching it somewhere. And then they have a lot of those. Before they go to work, they just go into that room and everybody is just laughing hysterically. They're just laughing, 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 laughing until they cry. And then they just go to work.
Wow. So. That would be a tremendous thing to do for sure. And you had mentioned earlier something about grateful. Here's what I think. In Canada, I've been in hospital 40 times. We have universal health care. The only thing I ever pay for is to rent the TV I watch while I'm in the hospital. My mom and my sister go on third world mission, medical missions trips. They tell me about people that line up at 6 o'clock in the morning, hundreds and hundreds of people deep, to see one doctor, because that village sees one doctor every few months or maybe a few times a year. In Canada, I could go within an hour to a medical clinic, never pay a cent, have anything I want looked after. My mom told me of one boy she saw. When you get club feet in North America, they put your kid in a cast, put his feet inward and fixes that. This boy had his whole leg and foot facing the opposite direction. It almost made me feel, it did make me feel nauseous and ill just to hear about it, as I thought of the pain and the disability, the uncomfort that would cause. And I was like, my goodness, like, people in Canada, complain like, oh, there's a long waiting time for surgeries and you can't always find a family doctor. I'm like, come on, people. This is one of the best systems in the world, and you're not even saying, you're saying 10 things bad about it before you say one thing good about it.
Yeah. Well, now, Tom, 40 times in the hospital. Now, by all, according to many statistics, you and I are not even supposed to be on the phone or on the show
exactly.
having this conversation. You should be somewhere under the bed feeling sorry for yourself, crying, or being miserable, or making everybody's life miserable, right? Because,
yes.
I mean, look at all the things that you went through. And look at some people who have not been through anything significant, for that matter, right?
Yes.
I mean, sometimes it's like, I hear in, I don't know where you are, in this country, I hear people have something they call bad hair day. I'm just trying to feel.
yeah, come on. Like,
I'm trying to figure out, what is that?
exactly. Now, Renee, I also read about you when you came to the U.S. You are a big fan of reading and of books. It is how you learned English. It is how you got to where you are. And when you got here, you couldn't go and buy the books. You had to read them. Where did you read them? Taxi cabs, or where was it you found them?
Yeah. Well, let's when I was in Port-au-Prince, something happened to me when I was a poor kid. And I was walking at a place called Chandomas behind the American tourist. They came and with an extended hand, begging for a penny, whatever they could afford to give me. One American couple gave me a dime, and they touched me compassionately. As a result, a dream was born in my heart instantly. I said to myself, one day, I want to go to the United States of America to eat lots of rice and chickens, right? Which I'm about sick of rice and chickens now. Rice is good, right?
Yes.
Give me the lobster, the steak, I'll be okay. But the thing is, that was the vision for me, to come to America to eat lots of rice and chickens and have a better life. Now, I left Haiti and came to the United States of America. Well, by the way, I went to Canada first. Okay, I was in Montreal. I played theater, drama with a group. And, you know, from Canada, I basically paid a truck driver to smuggle me into this country. Hopefully immigration is not listening to me. I know I'm a proud U.S. citizen today, but see, that's how I came to this country, okay, wedged between the rear tires of a tractor trailer in a push-up position covered with ashes and dust, okay?
Oh.
At the border, I remember when the driver stopped in the middle of the night and the immigration came to inspect the truck, I had a lump of dust in my throat and I wanted to cough, and I had to hold on so that they don't hear me, okay, so that I can make it slip. But, okay, I made it. I arrived in this country, all right? Now, when I came to this country, my biggest mountain, the mountain that I had to climb, was basically learning how to speak English, okay? Because I didn't speak English, and it was hard. And believe it or not, Tom, the first two words I learned were same thing. And then I started using those two words to the max. To this day, in fact, even when I go to speak at corporate America, the first thing I tell the audience is, you know, if you want to succeed, you don't have to work hard. Just model success. Do the same thing. That's what I did. So I'd go to McDonald's, and I'm hungry, and I didn't know, you know, how to read the menu. I wasn't the menu. I would literally stand behind the person in front of me and wait until they order. When they say, "May I take your order, sir?" I would say, "Same thing." Now, same thing was not always same thing. I mean, it was not consistent because it depends on what the people in front of me ordered.
Yes.
Now, I said that when the first thing I had to do in this country where I am is to learn English. Okay, so I was a janitor, and I would take the trash out. What I would do, I would pick up the letters in the trash can, and then I would sit down, and I would read the letters, and I'd write them by hand, and I would write words on my hand, okay, three words, and then I would review my words at the end of the week, And I started learning about how to format a letter, how to write a letter, all these things, right, from the trash can. In essence, my first real teacher was the trash can, right? And so I decided that if I was going to make it in this country, not survive, right? If I was going to make it in the country, I needed to have a command of the language. So that's how basically I started. Then I went to a library, and then I asked the lady how much to use the books. And she told me free. I was like, free? Are you kidding me? She said free. And I got me a library card, and I took to reading as if I was going out of style. And that's how I met Napoleon Hill, Thinking We're Rich.
Ah, and yeah, many other great books.
Yeah, a lot of other great books that I read during those years. One of the first people that I started was Ogmandino. I mean, I read a lot of his books. I mean, like, I probably read everything by Ogmandino, right?
Yes.
And so it's so funny because I spoke at the Napoleon Hill Foundation before.
Wow.
With Judith and Don Green and, you know, the whole
My favorite people,
there.
Judy Williamson
right?
and Don Green.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
Great friends of mine.
Yeah. Awesome people. But is this that, yeah, when I was there, I actually shared the story about, you know, how, I mean, who would have known, who would have thought that Napoleon Hill would write a book so many, many years before my time, before I would even come to this country. And then a guy like myself would come and find this book. And I took one concept from this book, and that concept literally exploded my career. It's the concept of going the extra mile. And it was like so powerful to me, and I started applying it. In fact, any business owner that is listening, and when they asked me to talk about customer service, I was like, well, I can tell you, I can give you my whole customer service speech in like one phrase. Go an extra mile for every one of your customers, and they'll love you for life. It's not
totally,
that hard, right?
Totally. It's not that hard. And Andrew Carnegie, who commissioned Napoleon Hill, he said that was the one principle that he owed almost all of his success to. And at that time, he was, and probably even in today's dollars, he would be the richest man in the world. He was at the time, probably still would be today. And he said he got all that by going the extra mile.
I tell entrepreneurs come to me. I do business coaching for entrepreneurs because, you know, a lot of them are struggling. And there was a time when business used to come to them, and now it's a different kind of party. But the first thing I say to them, if you want to double your business, double your customer service. Go an extra mile for every single one of your customers, and you double your business. As simplistic as it may sound, it's real. It's true in practicality. If you begin to practice it. In fact, it's not even in business, in life, period, right?
Yep.
Because the law of reciprocity tells us when you do something extra for people, they feel obligated to return the favor to you.
Right. And this is in there's a book called Influence. I think it's Tony
Cialdini. Yes.
And he talks about that when you do something for someone, psychologically, it's built into us to want to repay that person. And you don't have to do a lot to instill, to go that extra mile and to instill that reciprocity in people. Just showing kindness, someone giving you a dime. Look how much you felt, how much it made an impact in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing up so many good things. First of all, I was born and raised in Montreal, amazing, great city, and some of the most beautiful women in the world live in Montreal.
The Giant Festival,
Exactly. I've been there. And so you also talked about getting a job as a janitor. Listen, Renee, in my own life, I know a number of people looking for a job. Their effort to look is minimal, if at all, and they complain how hard it is to get a job. Here's a guy who doesn't speak English. He got a job as a janitor. How did you even get that job?
My first job in Miami was, I started a business in Miami with $3. So I couldn't get a job because I didn't speak English. And I was, you know, basically turned down for everything that I tried. But I decided that I was going to do my own thing, and I had $3. I bought me a bucket, and I bought me a couple of used towels at a thrift store and a bottle of dishwashing soap, and I went to South Miami to a bank called Total Bank. I became the 9-year-old boy walking behind the American tourist in Haiti, asking for a handout, except this time I was not asking for a handout. I was asking for an opportunity to make something for myself. So I started asking everybody in the parking lot for an opportunity to wash the cars. And so I knocked on so many doors, and I think of salespeople all the time. Sales is not hard and complicated. You just ask enough people, and then enough of them will say no, but some will say yes, because it's a numbers game, right? It's a numbers game.
And you didn't speak English well, so you didn't have a nine-page sales script.
Exactly. I didn't have a script. And I didn't have enough words to convince them. All I say, excuse me, sir, wash, and I just wave my thing and stuff. So, and a couple of people said yes, and, you know, and I started, and sure enough, now the employees of the bank would give me $5 and stuff, and I would wash their cars, and at the end of the day, I'd have like $35. That's a lot of money to eat rice and chickens, you know what I'm saying?
When you started with $3.
Exactly.
And so, Zig Ziglar says, if you tie a notepad to a dog's tail and you let him run around town all day, somebody's going to sign that order pad. That's what sales is. Just run around a bunch of people. Someone's going to sign the order pad.
Eventually. Yeah. That is absolutely true. So now, it's so funny we're saying that in this economy, the way things are, believe it or not, yeah, people have to work harder, but it doesn't matter. As long as you are willing to wake up and put your clothes on and work the phone and knock on doors. I mean, I tell people that all the time. I say, at least you're living in a country where you have doors to knock on. In my village, we had no doors to knock on, right?
I mean,
you've got prospects, you have customers, you are in a fruited land. There's no shortage of prospects for you. The only thing is you decide, you choose whether you are going to go out there and knock on some doors, and then, rejection is part of life. It's how the whole deal is structured for us, right? So
yeah. It's
you got to go through them, right? So if you see somebody who is not making sales, that means they are not taking rejections. They are not handling rejections. That's the only difference. So it's like, again, coming back to the same thing, we are fortunate enough that there's no shortage of prospects. I mean, yeah, the competition may be tougher, Tom, but nevertheless, it's like those who are willing to wake up and go out there and keep stepping, okay, in spite of the hard times. People ask me about changing, you know, how to deal with change. I say, well, change requires that you are persistent, okay? You don't give up when change shows up. That's just the bottom line. That's just the way it is. So it's just like we are, in essence, lucky. And if we count our blessings, that's all we need to do. Just count our blessings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I love sales. You know, because of my arthritis, I had to decide to sell on the phone. I've made over 250,000 sales calls on the phone.
Oh, my God.
And I say I've spoken to well over 5,000 presidents and business owners. Now, when I tell people I've spoken to over 5,000, I tell them not all of them said yes. A small percentage said yes to whatever I was selling. Some of them hung up within 3 seconds, but I reached them. I spoke with them. And so, like you say, if you knock on doors, if you make pick up your phone, dial the phone. Because I work with people where every time someone said no, they went through a whole analysis with whoever was there. I said this, and he said that, and he's a jerk, and he hung up, and he wasn't interested. And why are people like that? Meanwhile, I just hang up, dial the next call. Sorry, I don't have time for this analysis of every call.
So you see what you did, Tom? You just created a story, but you created a different story. They take the rejection, created a story in their head, and then they go and tell enough people the story, right, of how they've been rejected. But you chose to create a different story in your head, and then so you go out, and that gives you the momentum to go make more calls. So as Napoleon will say, it's all in our head. We make it up. I don't know, one of the books that I read by Napoleon Hill is a little book called You Can Work Your Own Miracles.
Yes.
That little book. That's a little powerful little book. I think it's like different than Think and Grow Rich, but it's a little, very powerful little books. And And Don Green sent me the one he just wrote.
Just recently, just come out.
Just recently. Just a whole thing. Just the whole thing is, it's all in our head, right? It's all in our head. We can change. We can choose to rewrite the story that we are telling now and tell it in a different way, in a more compelling way, instead of being depressed and being, feeling like, the world is being unfair to you, your boss is unfair, your company is unfair, and the country, the system is unfair.
Yeah.
That's a story that we choose to write, and we tell it to enough people, but we can change the script. We can change the story. If we want to, we can change the narrative, so to speak, if we want to. That's the way I see it. By the way, that's my story about story.
I love it. Now, you mentioned going the extra mile. You use that mainly. But the number one principle that Napoleon Hill was fanatical about was definiteness of purpose. How did you go from $3 and wash car to being a speaker and an author? It must have been even hard or not even conceivable in your brain when you're knocking on doors, wash car, to be standing in front of big companies speaking to their employees, and you found your purpose. How did you go from wash car to standing in front of thousands of people, inspiring them to pick it up and get going and work on their purpose and their goals?
Well, the first thing is, success leaves clues, right? So it's the same concept of modeling success. Now, eventually, I left Miami after spinning my wheels. I did everything, washed cars, janitor, whatever. Came to Atlanta, Georgia. I became a doorman in Atlanta. Prior to that, I had a job. I was taking care of a Jewish man. I was his companion, and he eventually died in my hands in around 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I connected with him at a profound level because I simply used this one concept, going the extra mile. I did everything for Mr. Arnovitz that no other caretaker would do for him. Right. So as a result, one of his children helped me get a job at a hotel to become a doorman. At the hotel, I was a doorman, but I was more like a reporter. I was interviewing people, successful people, and I was asking them questions about success. In fact, I started finding books in the backseat of some of the people whose cars I was parking. And then I was picking up those books, and I was like, oh, okay, this is what they're reading, and I started reading those books. But I discovered while working at the door that there is such a thing as being a motivational speaker, okay? And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to try this motivational speaking thing. Now, you know, I had my self-doubt, okay, in my head. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to do this, but, you know, I don't know. Then I started thinking, wait a minute now. I believe I can be a motivational speaker in America. I mean, I don't need all this education and all this thing that I'm talking about, whatever, because I see a guy on television in the United States giving American advice by the name of Jerry Springer. I said, wait a minute now.
if people pay to watch him, surely I have more valuable advice than that.
Exactly. If this guy can't give American advice. But see, the whole point is, here's when we talk about definiteness of purpose, let me show you what worked really well for me, is the power to visualize where I wanted to be. When I was at the hotel, I made the decision that I was going to become a motivational speaker. What I started doing, I started writing exactly what it was going to be for me, okay? Because, you know, in the book, Napoleon Hill explained that whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I get off at 11 o'clock at night, everybody would be going home. You know what I would do? I would go to the ballroom upstairs where they set up the room for the motivational speaker the next day for the conference. I would actually stand on that stage and give my speech to the empty chairs and visualize myself on that stage. Now,
wow.
I had a captive audience because the chairs couldn't go anywhere, right?
Yes.
So I would do that over and over and over again. Okay, same thing happened while I was at the hotel. A gentleman gave me a business card. And he told me that, well, he can't really promise me anything, but, you know, maybe he's with a company called Aflac, right? He said,
just keep
my card. Exactly. You know what I did? I kept his card, his business card. For over 10 years, I put it by my desk. Then I would look at the business card every time, and I'd say to myself, one day I'm going to speak for Aflac. One day I'm going to speak for Aflac. That's what definiteness of purpose is. You don't waver, okay? It is definite. It is something that you want, and you want it bad enough that you are willing to stay with it through the thick and thin, no matter how bad things are, right? You just stay with it. It's a dominating thought, dominating plan, something that is in your head that this is my only option. So I kept looking at the card. 10 years later, the phone rang. Thank God for caller ID. It's his Aflac.
Oh.
I pick up the phone. I said, hi, this is Rene Goddard for The Voice. Said, this is Lance Osborne. I said, Mr. Osborne? I said, I was waiting for your call, sir. I have your card right in front of me. I said, hold on, let me read your card to you. I pulled the card. I read the card to him. He said, well, everything is wrong on the card except for my name and the company. I'm no longer a sales field coordinator. I am one of the senior VPs for the company now. I said, oh, my Lord, you just don't know how long I've been praying for you, sir.
Yeah, wow.
So he basically called because he was inquiring. They have something they do for 2,000 of the senior level managers, the top people in Aflac in Atlanta. But every year they have a senator to come speak at that particular slot. But it, it, log that something was happening in Washington, D.C. There was a mandate. Every senator must stay in Washington, D.C., Mr. Osborne was telling me. And he said, Renee, if we can't get that senator, we're going to consider you for that slot. Okay, now, I'm from Haiti, and I have my voodoo doll, and I say, what is the senator's name? Because I would have started pinching him. With but no, I'm just kidding. I don't have a voodoo doll.
But yeah, you would never have prayed harder for him not to show up than anything
exactly.
else.
but anyway, okay, it turns out that, yeah, they could make it, and I got booked to speak at that event. And I went on the stage, and I walked on the stage, and I stood there. Remember, definiteness of purpose.
Mm.
I stood on that stage in front of 2,000 people at the Hyatt in Atlanta. I paused. I looked at the audience. I said, for you, this is the first time you are seeing me on this stage in front of you. For me, this is a return visit. In my imagination, in my mind, I have been in front of you so many times, and it's good to be back.
Oh, amazing. And this is a lot to do with the subconscious mind. I read Napoleon Hill when I was in my early 20s. I decided I want to be a speaker. At the time, I thought I'm going to be a multi-gazillionaire, real estate gazillionaire, something. I would have been embarrassed to talk about surviving with arthritis and living positively through tough times. But I visualized it. And then this year in March when I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention, it was...
Mm-hmm.
I could have pinched myself, and I told the audience the same thing you did. I said, I have spoken to you guys 25 years ago. You weren't in attendance at the time when I spoke to you, but I said, I have spoken to you for 25 years now. I'm glad to see you finally showed up and arrived so I could deliver it in person. The subconscious is incredible. You visualize and feed it your purpose. It is going to go out there and find the people and opportunities that you need to fulfill that purpose. It's incredible that people don't use this subconscious mind, because it'll go out there. I thought for many years, like, my subconscious must be sleeping. Like, what the heck is it doing? And now I'm living so many things that I pinch myself when it happens. I'm like, wow, this is even better than I dreamed of. My subconscious did a better job than I could even think of on my own.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's in Napoleon Hill talk about a burning desire, okay, and backed by strong emotion. And when that happens, your subconscious mind takes over. Right, and the moment your subconscious mind take over, it's just like you take a guy like Warren Buffett, or you know, the Bill Gates of the world, right? The subconscious mind, there's nothing in that subconscious mind that you can associate with failure, not being able to make it, all right? Because they know you can strip them from everything that they have. The subconscious mind will go to work and immediately recreate their fortune.
Exactly. And that's been said by a number of people. You can take the fortunes away from the wealthiest people in the world. Within a number of years, they'll have it replaced and they'll be in the same position they are, because there's nothing their subconscious mind believes that they cannot do.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is nothing new, Tom, right? This has been around for, you know, years and thousands of years. And it's just like you and I know, it's just like you and I know, we don't really tell our audiences anything new. Like right now, we're not saying anything new and different, right? We are simply validating what they know, okay? We're just saying like, yeah, you know about your subconscious mind. I'm here to tell you I've tried it and it worked, and I'm validating what you know. And you need to go back and revisit that and you know, make it work for you. right?
Exactly.
So that's basically we providing reminders to our audience.
Exactly. Now, the sad part is not everybody knows. There's probably 5% of people who read personal development books, read Napoleon Hill, have a definite purpose. You ask 100 people around, they don't know about subconscious. They've never been taught this in school. They never learned anything about success principles. And they think you're crazy if you think you can do whatever your subconscious, whatever you feed your subconscious. And so people like you and I and the people listening, they know this. They've experienced this. They've read this.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of people walking around, they're going to think you're somewhat crazy and that this cannot work and they've never heard of these success principles and definiteness
mm-hmm.
of purpose. I don't even know what I want to do tomorrow, let alone what my definite purpose is. That's sad. That's sad. And somehow we got to get it into schools and to young people. We got to get parents teaching it to their kids. Well, parents got to learn it first, then teach it to their kids.
Just the concept of teamwork, right? It's just like there are so many people who are struggling out there because they have the notion that they can make it on their own, that they don't need other people to make it, right? And
right.
It's just like who was that? It was Charlie Tremendous Jones, right?
I love him.
Before he passed away. In fact, we were at the Napoleon Hill Foundation together. And you know, he talks about your network and the people that you know and something
yes.
he said about
you'll
two
be
or three
the
years
same
from
as
now.
You'll be the same today. You'll be the same 5 years from now as you are today, except for the people you meet and the books you read.
And the books you read. Yeah, exactly. Correct, right? So it's just like, yeah, the people you meet, and then those are the people that who are going to be basically on your team. And then you have your immediate team, people who are close to you, but you have to – but the whole notion of entrepreneurs is just like they have been trying alone. They've been trying to make it on their own. The self-help is an illusion, okay? We say that we are self-made, but we are made because of others. And I tell people, every penny that you and I will want, okay, if somebody has it in their pockets, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not in your pocket. It's not in mine. So we have to cooperate. The spirit of cooperation that Napoleon Hill talk about when, you know, he talks about teamwork and having a team, and stuff like that, is the ability to do just that. It's just like the mindset of, you know, competition, right? I'm competing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not competing. It's cooperating, right? And then make the right alliances with the right people, the right team, and then bam, there it is. I've been there before. I really, frankly, thought, I don't need nobody. I'm okay. I'm cool. I think I can do this by myself, right? I got this covered, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the point, you say, you know what? I need Tom, right? I need Tom. I need this person. I need that person. And thus
exactly.
We have what is called, LinkedIn and social media.
Yeah, so many
Facebook
things. And then people who aren't familiar with the kind of things we do, they think, well, I would love to get help from Renee, but he's too busy and he's speaking to big companies. He wouldn't find time or be able to help me. It is the reverse. The people that I am now working with, talking to people like yourself, busiest people, well-paid people, being paid lots to speak to companies and businesses, they take the time more than anybody to help other people as much as they can. They share their time, they share their money, they share their wisdom. And that's how they got to where they are. And now that they are where they are, they don't stop. They do it more.
Exactly. Now, I was thinking about it the other day. Usually you go to a blog, right? The person writes a blog post, and it's like a ghost town. There is no comment on it, right?
Yeah.
Now, this person, I don't care how big this person is, it's so refreshing to come and see this nice comment on your blog, right? Now, you, as a salesperson, can pick up the phone and try to call this person and call this person and try, you can never get on their radar. But by taking the time to go and write this nice comment on that blog with zero comment, this person, all of a sudden, you can begin to build a relationship right there. Do you see what I mean?
It is totally so true, and I do that on so many blogs, and there's so much good blogs out there, and you're so right. They're appreciative of it. They contact you, and now you have a relationship with someone that, as you said, you could try phoning them 138 times. You're not going to reach them. But
no,
you say something nice about them on their blog and comment on a great post and share it with your social media. All of a sudden,
exactly.
That person is contacting you saying, thank you, thank you. What can I do for you?
Exactly. And thus, we come back to, again, the law of reciprocity, right?
Exactly. And so some people, the negative thinkers will say, well, how can I help? Or what can I do to go the extra mile? I only have this. I only do that. I'm not important. There are so many ways that you could help and encourage and be of service to others that you've never even thought of. And they could be easy and they could be free and they could not take a lot of time either.
Yeah. The concept of going the extra mile is exactly that, right? Most people want to go out. So the new kind of marketing called content marketing, right?
Yes.
Content marketing is completely the opposite than traditional marketing. Traditional marketing says, I pick up the phone and I tell you what I have and I ask you to buy from me, okay?
Right.
This kind of marketing is repelling, is people just, I don't want to hear what you have. It's all about you. It's not about me. I don't care. Now,
yes.
On the other hand, content marketing is completely different. If I call you, for example, I'm a landscaper. I call you. I said, I created the most beautiful plan for any average home where they can literally go to Home Depot and buy this, buy that, and create, you know, this whatever in their yard, right? And I'd like,
mm-hmm.
I'm calling because I'd like to send you this DVD so that you can see how you can actually get your house to look that way. Can you? You have a mailing address or something. Well, automatically, now the call is different because I'm calling to give you, not to ask you, right?
Yes. And
so
you never even asked them for a sale there. You asked to give them some great information.
No. Yeah, but the point is, the great information I give you, I know fully well you are not going to do your yard because I already know you on a list. I identify you as a professional who doesn't have time. But people have this craving. They want to learn, right? They want to get this information. So if I educate them and give them this information, if I have the right what is called content strategy, okay? It's not content for the sake of content, and I am actually dripping that content on them, then guess what? When they really need a landscape, who are they going to feel reciprocated to? They're going to feel that they have to return the favor to me because I gave them something. And it's the same thing for anything. I don't care what anybody does. Content marketing is here to stay. Is you create a piece of content that is so valuable, so priceless, then you call everybody in the world and put it in their hands where they will gladly love to get the CD, this DVD, or whatever it is, right? And so we flip the picture from that needy mentality of, hey, it's all about me. My product does this, and I can do this for you, and you know, and you should listen to me because I sell. Well, I mean, I'm working. I don't want to hear that, right?
Get off the phone.
The law of reciprocity says you give them something that is so valuable to them, then they feel like they are, you know, obligated to return the favor to you. I think it was Chris Anderson who wrote a book called what they call a freemium, F-R-E-E.
Oh,
is it a freemium?
Nice. Yeah,
freemium.
Yeah. Good
exactly.
title.
Yeah, a very good title, right? Well, we are in the age of freemium, right? It's just like, yeah, you give him this, and then bam, you are in, right? I mean, I'd like
exactly.
to visit you because I want to drop this or to give this to you. So very
yeah.
simple concept. And what is that? That's exactly going the extra mile, doing
exactly.
something completely unexpected, and then you go the extra mile to create that content. It may take you a whole month, and you may not even have to create it yourself. So every business that I coach, okay, the first thing I go through with them is the content strategy, the content marketing, right? Is I
yes.
want to make sure that they, even if they don't create it themselves, they pay a con.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what a good situation when they're calling you to ask you to do business with them rather than you calling them, right? Hello? Hello?